no story behind it, I think. Like my mother said, my dad was pretty sick when they had the village down here at the old village. My dad was pretty sick, he said. He couldn't do nothing for his family, for us. Maybe I wasn't born yet at that time. So there was my brother-in-law, who was married to my cousin, brought the family up to Nolado with a dog team. And they had a mission in Nolado. There were sisters and a priest there and brother, you know, in Nolado. And then they had a clinic or hospital there. And that was only the place, closest place they could go by dog team. So my brother, you know, brought my dad and my mother and the family up and stayed in Nolado for several years. Okay, the mission was taken care of. The Catholic mission was taken care of us, you know, because we were so small. Like, I don't think I was born at that time, but the rest of my brothers, you know. Well, my dad knew it, you know, and my mother. So he stayed pretty close to church, even though it was, even he had to crawl to church. I think he would go to church, any mass. He never missed an Easter Sunday mass. My dad, if there was no priest there, he'd go to Nolado, to go to church. And at Christmas time, the same way. He didn't like Independence Day, though. My dad didn't like Independence Day, 4th of July. And St. Patrick's Day. He didn't like those days. Because it's just a time for people to be happy, he said, you know, in those days. But in holidays of the Catholic holidays, like Christmas and Easter Sunday, he wouldn't go out there and spread wood on that day, you know.
Well,
because it was a day for people to be happy, he said, you know, to meet one another happy and drinking. Well, my dad was, he was quite a drinker too. But as we were growing, you know, he was like me. He'd think about his family more than the drink. So he didn't think too much about drinking, even though he loved to drink. But he never refused a drink from anybody, you know. But he wouldn't try to overdo himself with a drink, you know. And I know my dad, he used to have whiskey all the time. We used to go out trapping, he used to have a bottle of whiskey with him all the time. And every evening, every night after getting through work, he used to take one drink and then go to bed, you know. Bernard Peter.
How is he spelled his first name? B-E-R?
B-E-R-N-A-R-D.
Peter,
P-E-T-E-R. Yeah, P-E-T-E-R.
Okay, and then, did I give this a number? Oh, yeah, number 11.
That was the time I was down at Seward.
Okay, and that's you on the right.
Yeah. And this is Eskimo from Nome. And he was one of my good friends. I mean, those Eskimos, they really liked me very much. In fact, there was one from White Mountain. He just thought of me just like his brother, I think. While I was in the hospital, you know, he used to sneak over to me at night and then sleep with me at night. We were not supposed to do that. But he'd come over and sneak over to me and get under my sheets with me and sleep inside my bed with me.
You know. Keep
you
company.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And there was another one from down at Kenai. It was the same way. You know, he was an Aleut, I think.
Yeah.
He was the same way too. He liked me just as much as the Eskimos do.
They must have thought you liked them too, huh?
Well, I've always been friendly to them, you know. And then, well, if I stay for one place so long, you know, I make a lot of friends, like Fairbanks, and I meet a lot of those natives now, and they all like me very much, and they all know me pretty well too now, you know. And every time I go up there about 3 or 4 times a year, because I got a daughter up there working as a nurse, and I go visit him. And finally got used to the people there, the native people.
And so this person on the left, what is his name?
His name was Serge Obrek. He had an Eskimo name, Obrek, something like an Eskimo name.
So this is about 1948, 49?
I think it was about 40s, mid 47. Because I came home in 48.
You came home in
48? That's the only time I ever gained weight. I was 165 pounds at that time. And my normal weight is 150. And right now, I'm about 150. And when I get that fat, oh, gee, I feel so funny. You know, looks like my whole body was just moving.
It makes you look
moving
different.
Around. Yeah.
Well, it's because you're getting a lot of rest, huh?
I was getting a lot of rest and lots to eat, you know, that's what it cost.
Okay, and then number 12.
This I couldn't make out what it is. Oh, yeah, this is a cemetery. You know, every spring, in about Memorial Day, we'd go down to the cemetery and up here. And then we have a party at Catholic priest, same mass, you know, on the beach. And then we have a party down there. And after that, we go visit our relative cemetery. And that's what we were doing. I think that's me right there. We were changing the flag in my in-law's grave. My mother-in-law and my father-in-law. We were changing the flag in there, or changing a flagpole.
So this is people clean up everything?
Clean up around the cemetery. And then some of them would plant some flowers or grass, you know, for the summer. And
the people still do that?
People are doing that pretty often now. Yeah. Every Memorial Day we go to
the
cemetery. We have a picnic at the beach or around the grave. And then after that we come back, and then we have potlatch too in the evening here in the village, you know. It's our a tradition of doing it, like, you know. And then, like, when we give out our dish for our loved ones, like, my girls put out an eight dishes for my wife, you know. And just in memory of my wife. Okay, these eight people that they are going to dress next year for the stick dance. But those people that has helped, you know, when my wife died, like they clean up my wife and some other things, put on clothes, and like some of them give them gloves or boots to be put on, you know, when after they die. So, just to pay them back, we do this. You know, we never pay each other when there's a death in town, but all of us participate any work that's supposed to be done, like digging a grave or making a coffin or making an outside coffin or making a fence for the grave. You know, and when it's one time that we pay one another is when we have the stick dance in memory of our loved ones. Just like thanking people for what they have done, you know. Even though we thank them too in the public, you know, we still, just like we thank them again for, you know, for the things that they have done for us. Like, for me, you know, when my wife was loved pretty near by everyone, you know, especially in Nolado. Well, I picked out two women from Nolado that we are going to dress and counter that, you know, because one of them it wasn't our relation, but he was just, he just loved my wife so much that he just stayed with us till my wife died with me. And he stayed here for about 10 days with my wife. And my wife was pretty low then in December. And the other girl, that woman I picked out was, cleaning up my wife and things like that after she died, you know, and then moved her around, things like that. And things like that, you know, you remember when you lose your loved one. Even though I was a broken hearted, you know, I just think about those things. And so therefore, I was thinking to myself all this time, you know, that I'm going to do everything what in our tradition way. You know, what I heard from way back for this potlatch we're going to make next winter. And like everything that my wife did with me, and, you know, I'm going to do all those things. I was thinking, you know, I even told Father Sebastian that, you know, there's only one thing, Father, I couldn't do is make a song in memory of my wife. And well, there's a several guys that are making songs in memory of my wife, you know. But me, as much as I love my wife, I couldn't make the song. I just have I don't know how to say it, you know. I could sing all right, but I can't put the songs together, you know. So, well, Father didn't say a thing for a while. He said, maybe if somebody will help me, I said, maybe I could do it. And, oh, he said, maybe I should bring you back to Huslia and see a Wilson Sam. You know, he's pretty good on singing. Maybe he could put the words together for you, he said, you know. And, but Father, what tune I'm going to use? I said, I think every time I drive snow machine, drive boat, I always think about that. I told him, you know, but I still couldn't get a right tune. Because every time I drive a boat or snow machine, I'm always singing or humming or thinking.
It still might come to you.
I hope it does, yeah.
So those people in the lot that you picked to help, who are those people who are you picked to dress?
One of them was Patricia Akata, and the other one is Luana Summers. And my daughters pick out six from here.
And so
it's usually only one, you know, that you would pick out for a dressing. In the tradition way that I know from way back. But the other ones that had helped, you know, you give them some, like boots or gloves or hat or shirt, or give them a suit or whatever, you know.
The aid that you pick, you're gonna dress them up with everything. Is that how you do it when you dress them? When you have people make clothes, or
well, it's mostly all handmade clothes, but now they're doing it at easier way right now. You just take out a catalog and then orders all the stuff, you know. But I know my mother used to, when he used to make some things like that, she used to sew all night with coal oil lamp, you know, not very bright. And he used to sew all night with sewing things, sewing all the time.
She sewed a lot of your clothes too?
He sewed most of our clothes. I think what we grew up in, because there was no Sears Roebuck or Montgomery or Penny's or Arlen catalog in those days, and the stores didn't have any clothing at all, just very few oversized clothes, that's all they had in the grocery stores, you know.
Well, since you're talking about when you have a stick dance next year, what other kinds of things do you have to do to prepare for that?
Okay, I got to prepare with some food. You know, that's what I'm thinking to do from early this spring. I'm going to fish salmon and try to put away as much berries to I can put away. You know, because, like I said, my wife always wanted something. I used to want something like homemade or berries or fish, dry fish, and you know, things like that. That he used to like. In fact, my wife used to like beaver meat. You know, and as soon as there's somebody who catches beaver in town, you know, first beaver in town in months of January, February, I'd go there and buy some, regardless if it's what the price is. And I just to try to make my wife happy, you know. Oh, there's a lot of things that I did to try to keep her happy when he was living with me. In fact, I used to take her out camping. That's one reason why I got this houseboat. You want to go out camping. So we just go out camping. In springtime, one summer I worked for PHS when they were putting in the sewer in here. I'd work 8 hours a day working, and then in the morning, 4 o'clock, my wife would wake me up and we had to go to fishing it. We'll go check our net. We'll go down 22 miles down here, check our net, come back. By the time we come back, I'm ready to go back to work another 8 hours. And just about 4 hours sleep every night I was getting. But I never feel it, you know, I never feel it those days because I was strong, you know, I was healthy. And right now I'm the same way. I could stay up and play cards all night and get half hour sleep, and I'd be working 8 hours a day here in the school yet. It seems like I feel better when I get lack of sleep. But I couldn't do it for 3 or 4 days now, you know, in a row. If I go to sleep and it was lack of sleep for about a couple of days, boy, I really take it though. But the third day, I really take the sleep. And like this last time, we just had an accident here, you know. And I stay up all night and play cards all night. And then I'd come back to work. Gee, last Friday night was a Saturday night. Saturday night, I couldn't stay up anymore. I went to bed at 8 o'clock. I went to sleep at 8 o'clock. Never woke up till 9 o'clock next morning. 11 hours, so that's too long for me. I couldn't move myself after I sleep 11 hours. The longest I could sleep is about 8 hours, but I still feel it. You know, my back is just like somebody just break my back. I just got to keep rolling around for a while and loosen up. Because I never lay down that long. I mean, ever since I was in hospital, I never lay down that long anymore after that, you know. The longest I could lay down is about 8 hours.
Yeah, well, like last week, since you're mentioning the accident, you know, when there's a funeral around here, it's one of the things people do is get together and play cards, huh?
Well, in order to keep a company with the guys like the family, mostly, you know. Well, like the Indians are much different than any other tribe, I guess. You know, the Eskimos are much different too, I know. Because they never keep no bodies in the house, or as soon as their loved one is gone, they bring them all to church or some other place and forget about it. But us Native people are not like that. We still respect one another, even though we lose our loved ones, you know. Well, in order to keep the family company, we keep the body in the house for about two or three days in the house, you know, and then people just donate food and gather around and eat in there and stay in there and play cards in there or games or some other thing, just to kind of entertain the family away from, you know, from being brokenhearted down, you know. But after a while, it would hit them back again, you know. But it wouldn't, if the body is gone, then maybe not too hard. Well, according to me, I was the same way, you know. I cannot sleep after I lost my wife last 2 years. I just couldn't sleep. The longest I sleep was about 4 hours, and I'd get up, walk around town, back and forth, till I go back to work. And the people kind of know it, you know, and then pretty soon I began to get sick, and I started to get sick in the stomach. So I go see the doctor. I went to see the doctor twice this year already, because the lack of that, you know. And then, you know, what the doctor told me? The doctor told me to get out more. Don't stay in the house too much. You're worrying too much. I know it. I know I worry too much. You know, I didn't know what I worry about, but I just began to think about my wife, you know, about the things that we used to do. Me and my wife used to have a lot of fun out in camps and go travel. And all those things come back to my mind, and then pretty soon I cannot sleep. And that's I lay in bed for 4 hours before I go to sleep. I just gotta get up and walk around in the house or uptown. Well, the doctor told me not to stay in the house too long. If you start to feel something, just get out of town. Or go someplace. Go someplace weekend. Go force yourself, go visit your friends. And, well, I tried it too. And then I'd go see Father, you know, and then Father would take me someplace. And I told him I couldn't stand it anymore. And besides missing my wife and then want to see my kids, want to see my girls. So Mr. Kyle, this principal, Mr. Kyle, know it too. Anytime you feel that way, good one, just let me know. I said, and if you don't got no money, he said, I'll lend you the money to go anywhere you want to go. Mm-hmm. Just try to keep your mind off them.
Try to help each other then.
Yeah, well, some people around town too, they kind of know it, and then they try to help me, you know. I know they know how I would feel. Mm-hmm.
Okay, we're still on the photographs, and we're at number 13.
Mm-hmm. This is Missouri Stanley in his young days. I got a funny story about this guy. You know, Missouri was just like a white man. You know, you could see when he was young. He went to Kaikuk, up here at Kaikuk in springtime, I think. The people were scared of him. You know, they thought he was a white man, you know. And first thing, they thought he was a game warden. You know, people were scared of game warden, you know, in those days, because a lot of them killed too many beaver in springtime. And you were allowed only 10 limits, and some of them catch maybe 50 or 60 beaver. And, but the other people attack those beavers for them. So he thought the Missouri was a game warden when he first went to Kaikuk, you know, and the people were just scared of him. They say, I don't know. Well, he went with different people that they know from here, you know. That's how come they know that he wasn't a game warden. Okay, there's the boardwalk that I was telling you about, you know. It was practically new that at that time, I guess. So it must have been somewhere in the late 30s, the way it looked. Mm-hmm. Well, people used to have a garden along the bank there. You know, there was about three or four gardens all the way up along the bank. But now the bank has caved in so close to do away with the gardens because the bank was caving into them. And some of them make their own gardens way back and out in the camps like where I sit, you know. And this must be in a pretty late in July, the way the grass look.
Mm. Okay, and then there's number 14.
Okay, there's these guys were dressed in memory of some loved ones that we lost. Well, I do not know who they were dressed for. Mm-hmm. Or I don't know who dressed them.
Okay, and the people here in the front row sitting down on the left.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Okay. This is Anna Madras.
Mm-hmm. Maggie Andre,
A-N-D-R-E.
Okay.
And Mary Rose Pitt, Agnes.
Okay, and then the back row standing.
Back row from the left is mm-hmm. Albert Alexei, he died. And this the second one is Madeline Solomon, who's my sister-in-law from Kaikuk. And here's Mary Alexei, who's my cousin.
Mm-hmm.
And here's the one Plaskar Nikolai, my buddy, I was telling you about.
Now, Plaskar's P-L-A-S-K.
P-L-A-S-K-E-R.
And then Nikolai.
N-I-C-K-O-L-I.
How is Madeline your sister-in-law?
He was married to my first cousin.
Oh.
And like I say, Bunner people are between here, Kaikuk and Norado are all related to one.
Mm-hmm.
In some way, they are related to one another.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
So that was Herbert was your first Herbert. Cousin.
Mm-hmm. Herbert was my first cousin, right?
And then number 15.
Well, this is almost the same picture, I guess, the way it looks.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, it's the same picture, yeah.
Okay, and then number 16.
Oh, this is my cousin, Mary Alexei. That looked like up there at the creek. They put out grayling net in the springtime. After the ice go, this looks like early in the spring the way it looked. She got a grayling net out.
A lot of people do that?
I know very few people do that in the springtime. Just to get something fresh. You know, I used to do it, me too. As soon as the ice used to go, And then I used to have a canoe back there and then put out fishnet just to get something fresh. If I don't get no ducks or beaver or something, you know, I used to put out fishnet.
Was that when you still had children growing up at home? You did that?
Mm-hmm. But that's the hardest time I ever work, I guess, when my kids were growing up.
Now that we finished these pictures here, one of the things I wanted to talk about, last time when we taped, we hardly talked about when you got married. You said that you got married when you were 21.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought maybe we could just talk about what it was like when you got married and your wife, what her maiden name was, who her family is,
mm-hmm.
And how you met and got together.
I went to school with my wife, and we was pretty close together during the school time, you know. That's how we got. Anyway, we lived in contact all the time, and her maiden name was Madros, and she had
her first name is
Florence. Mm-hmm. And then after she got, she was smarter than me because she went to school more than us. His dad was carrying mail, you know, from month of November all the way through May. You know, then he had more time to go to school all year round, you know, all the school year round. And, you know, like for us, you know, was out camp at that time, you know. And then after she quit school, after she was 16, then she worked at the teacher's aide in the school. And then I got drafted for the army when I was at 1940, I think. It was in 42. I was drafted for the army. And then I couldn't pass. I'm still hitting myself for that now, you know. Otherwise, I wouldn't be I don't think I'd be a maintenance man in school or custodian, you know, in school like this. And because later on, I figured it out that the army was this your second opportunity, you know, for any kinds of education. I kind of figured it out after these boys. Like, we got quite a few ex-GIs here that was in World War II. Came home and they had the GI Bill of Rights to do anything. You know, they could be a flyer, they could be a mechanic, they could be make anything out of themselves if they just stick with the army. Him.
So you couldn't pass because of your health?
I couldn't pass in account of my health at that time. Well, they told me that my health was, my heart was was too weak or something. Or even right now, even the doctors make mistake about my heart. You know. In fact, my own son-in-law, my son-in-law doctor made mistake on him and my heart, about my heart. I stayed in Anchorage Hospital for 9 days to see a specialist that came from Seattle. When my son-in-law told me to go over there because there was specialists coming in. And they checked me in Tanana, couldn't find anything wrong with my heart. And my son-in-law came down here, he was on a field trip, and he checked my heart and he said, "Something wrong with your heart. Something wrong with your heart, good one." He said, okay, he put me down to get a checkup in Tanana again. Well, I stayed in Tanana for 4 days, 3 days, and after that they shipped me to Anchorage for, or not, how do you call it now, cardiacal heart or something, do you call it?
Cardiac
heart. Then I went to Anchorage, and before I seen the specialist, they sent me back. The doctor checked me again. "Hey, good, your heart is normal." You don't have to see the specialist. Go downstairs and get your ticket and go home. And still the same way right now. They're still the same way yet about my heart. I don't know who to see now. Well, that's what they thought was wrong with me when they were checking me for the army. Well, I got kind of nervous too at that time, because the lieutenant came up to me, and after I got my physical examination, he came over to me and packed my. You're an army boy now, he told me, you know, he's tapping me like that. And then I don't know what happened. You know, I stayed there for a couple of days, and then they told me to go see the doctor again. And see the doctor again and check me again. There's something wrong with your heart. That's what he told me. And it's been on ever since then, like that, up to now. And they still don't find out what's wrong with it yet. Maybe it's too strong.
Especially you were working hard those days too,
went out
in the woods. And,
So that time you went to the military,
did you have children already?
No, I was single at that time.
You weren't married?
I wasn't married, yeah. Okay, my wife was in Nevada at that time. I didn't get married with her. Well, ever since, so I went to the, I was on selected service, so my wife didn't care anymore, I guess, you know, before I got married with her. So she just went to Nevada and stayed there with her sister up there. And then he got sick, you know. And look, I came back at that time. You know, she was pretty sick, he said, and she heard that I came back to Caltech. And then she put some life into her, you know, and then she got a little bit better. She had pneumonia. And I heard she had pneumonia when I got here. So the next day I just put on my snowshoes and walked in the water. You know. I was doing that before anyway, because I had some other girlfriends that I had in the water. You know. And I never used to have dogs. I never had dog team till after I got married. That's what I tried to explain to my boys too. And I told them I was out every day, you know, on snowshoes. Every day I was out on snowshoes, and I could run down, I figure I could run down anything in those days. And there's nothing that would run very far with me in snowshoes, you know. And, like Nevada was just, 36 miles was not too far for me, you know. And I never hesitate to put on my snowshoes to go that far. I'd walk all the way up, and then I'd dance all night too. You know, never feel nothing at all.
Were other people walking that far on snowshoes then?
Oh yeah, there were some guys that done it with me. Black Plasker, Nikolai, Franklin Madero, Simon, Stanley, Andy Nikolai. All those guys used to go back and forth with me in snowshoes. Well, they said it was 40 miles by along the bank, you know. But it's like if you go straight, it's 36.
So when you went to Nevada, then you saw her and she got better?
She got better, yeah.
And then you decided you'd get married?
Well, I just came back without any work, you know. So I just stayed for another year, and then after that, I got married with her a couple of years.
So how did your life change when you got married with her?
Oh, we had pretty good life, nice, clean life together. You know, and she was happy with me, and I was happy with her. And then I respect her more. She gave me 11 children. You know, they were all healthy, and both of us tried our best to having healthy kids. And then after our youngest one started going to school, then didn't stay home very much, you know. We used to go out camping or any place you want to go, like go for pick berries or camp out or so forth. or she want to go visit some other place, and we just leave and we just go with her.
So when you were raising your children, those first children, did you take them out to the trap line with you? You all went out, or did
that's
you
what,
have to stay in?
That's what really gets me mad when after my oldest one started go to school. Well, two of my oldest ones were going to school. Well, after they get through to grade school in here, you know, they went to high school. All except my oldest daughter didn't finish her grade school here. You know, but that wasn't the school. There was a different school here that was out here. There was a school out here. It was BIA school anyhow. What they were doing, they were picking out some kids from the smartest kids in the school for a Catholic school down at Copper Center. The Catholic school was just coming up at that time there. I think it was in 1953. They were picking out some kids that were real smart and that had a pretty good, education in them, you know, and they think that would be good. So they pick out my daughter here and tell Miss Sanders and my daughter, which she's just as old as my daughter, my oldest daughter. They were picked out, both of them, and my daughter was only 11 years old then. So they took her down to the Copper Center School. And she did, they all want to come back in the spring. And then she went back again. She finished her grade school in there, you know. Finished her grade school, and then she graduated. And then she said she was going to be a nurse once she graduated. So the Catholic priest, the Catholic church helped them, you know, to encourage her more. So he told her to. He asked me if I could send her out to Spokane. I said I'm willing to do it. I spent my last dollar for an education for my kids, you know. So we sent her out to Spokane and started going to school there as a nursing school in Spokane. She went to school there for 4 years and then she graduated. She graduated from nursing school there. Well, I told my wife after 4 years, I said, one of us got to be out there for the graduation. So I told my wife, you can go because I still got to work here. So I sent my wife went out to Spokane in London. But there were some other teachers that we know that took, helped her from Seattle, you know, took her to Spokane and was attended the graduation. She came back and stopped at Seattle again. And then she was in, she said she's going to come back to Alaska. Well, she worked out there for 2 years and then come back to Alaska. She would come back to Anchorage, at Tanana. She came back to Tanana and started to work there as a nurse. And then this doctor ran into Dr. Kamik. And pretty soon she started to go around together and then they got married, you know.
Well, so you were talking about when you started having children and you were making a living for them, and just how long you went out to the trap line or when you had to move back to town to be with the kids at school.
Well, that time, you know, it was really hard to act at that time when I'd take my family out in September, okay, late September, and then come back in early December. You know, then just go in and out, trap line, come to town, get wood, water, and then back out again. And that's the way we were doing lately, you know.
And you were running dogs then?
I was running dogs then.
And that's the time you wore yourself down when you got sick?
It was during that time I wore myself down, you know. Because you get lack of sleep and lack to eat and so forth, you know.
So you were out hunting too? You'd be out trapping and hunting and come back and take care of chores in town?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we were just on a move right along. And like I said, when I got married, I didn't have any dogs, you know, but I was in good health in those days. Because I used to work and run every day. And until after I got married, I had 2-3 dogs when I got married. And 6 pups. I tell my boys, I said, I had the best dogs in this town. There was nobody that could beat me in dog racing, Caltech and Norado. You know. Why I had good dogs? I treat those dogs just like I was raising you up.
I remember you talking about
those
pups and how you fed them.
Mm-hmm. I fed those dogs. Well, I had to do it, though, because I had only 3 old dogs and 6 pups. I fed those dogs 3 times a day so they can work for me that next winter. And I run with those pups that summer just to train them. If I was a little bit younger, I'd...